would like to introduce our presenter for today, Dr. John Selinger. Dr. Selinger is the Director of Clinical Health Psychology at VA Connecticut Healthcare System, where his clinical, teaching, and administrative work is largely focused in the area of chronic pain management. Dr. Selinger serves as the Director of the Integrated Pain Clinic, as co-chair of the Facility Pain Committee, and is co-director of the Clinical Health Psychology Postdoctoral Residency Program. Dr. Selinger is also an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the Yale School of Medicine. We will be holding questions for the end of the talk. At the end of the hour, there will be a feedback form to fill out immediately following today's session. Please stick around for a minute or two to complete this short form, as it is critically important to help us provide you with great programming. Dr. Bob Kearns, director of the Prime Center, will unfortunately not be on our call today. And now I'm going to turn this over to our presenter.
Okay, thank you, Robin. I appreciate the invitation to speak on the call today about some of the innovative work we've been doing here at VA Connecticut in our Integrated Pain Clinic. And so the title of my talk, the Integrated Pain Clinic, Facilitating Coordinated Care Within the Stepped Care Model, is really in some ways going to come across as a story. And my intention is to speak to you about some of the challenges and some of the barriers that we have encountered here at our facility with implementing the Stepped Care Model, and talking with you about some of the creative ways that we've come up with to work around some of those barriers, in the hopes that this might spark some thoughts and ideas for those of you on the call, as you may be encountering a lot of these same problems at your own facility. So to start out today's call, I just want to first get a sense of who we have on the line with us. So our first poll question, if you could all take a look at the question and just let me know who you are and what your role in chronic pain care is at your facility.
And our options here are primary care provider, nurse, psychologist, pain specialist, or other. Responses are coming in. I will give you all a few more moments before closing the poll question out. Okay, looks like things are slowing down. I'm going to close that. And the results we're seeing are 6% saying primary care provider, 17% nurse, 28% psychologist, 8% pain specialist, and 41% other. Thank you, everyone, for participating.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys, for giving me your input. It's helpful to know who is on the line, and I wish we had more than five response choices so we could have figured out what that other 41% represents in the other category, but we were unfortunately restricted. So what we're going to do is, just in moving forward, before getting into the specifics about our clinic here at VA Connecticut, I wanted to first speak specifically about the Stepped Care Model, as this is really what this whole thing is wrapped around. And as many of you are probably familiar, the VHA Pain Management Directive, the most updated one we have, was issued in 2009, really calls for a stepped care approach to chronic pain management. And as defined in the directive, we have here the definition of stepped care. But in short, really what the Stepped Care Model is designed to do is to think about the individual who's presenting with pain, and looking at the complexities of that patient's presentation, and providing them the right care at the right time, recognizing that the majority of chronic pain care is taking place within a primary care setting. But then as we move through the stepped care approach, we then think about how do we get patients to the next step beyond primary care, which is off to our specialty care providers. And for those folks who need more care than what an outpatient specialist might be able to provide, how to get them to step three, which is really our more intensive CARF-accredited pain rehab programs, which now every VISN within VA should have at least one CARF-accredited pain rehab program. So the bottom line is, the Stepped Care Model is really designed to provide the right level of care at the right time for patients with chronic pain. So kind of looking at what this appears, how this appears graphically, is starting, of course, at the bottom with step one and working our way up, we see the variety of resources at each of the steps in the model that are to be present to assist patients and providers as they manage the chronic pain condition. So starting in at step one in our patient-aligned care teams is where we see a lot of our, you know, if not the majority of our chronic pain care taking place. Everything from routine screening to comprehensive pain assessments, utilization of resources such as mental health primary care integration, and other services that are targeted at the primary care setting to both facilitate treatment of the chronic pain as well as kind of the larger psychosocial profile that accompanies a patient who might be living with chronic pain. And then as we move up to step two, at our secondary level of consultation where we see our specialists, so our pain medicine and rehab specialists, behavioral pain management programs, multidisciplinary pain clinics, substance abuse treatment programs, other broader mental health programs, et cetera. And then, of course, as the complexity persists, we get our patients up to the step three where they are referred on to CARF-accredited rehab programs. So embedded within the step care model is really the biopsychosocial approach to treating pain. And as many of us know, that the treatment of chronic pain is usually best targeted not just at the biological elements of a pain condition with which a patient is presenting. And in fact, in most cases, the biological piece of a patient's pain experience has oftentimes been well addressed, well worked up, well treated. But what we see is this persistence of chronic subjective reporting of pain as well as psychological and social distress that goes along with that. So to think about targeting chronic pain treatment just at the biological aspect of a patient's pain at the exclusion of the psychological and the social elements, we know really does not get us to a get the patient to a better place. We know there's empirical support to suggest that the biopsychosocial approach yields the best outcomes in terms of chronic pain management. But we know that most facilities, although we may appreciate the biopsychosocial approach, that at times there's an absence of a coordinating structure. How do you bring all these elements together? How do you coordinate all of this care? Because for a lot of our patients, this level of coordination is quite intense and can really take quite a bit of time. And this is really one of the problems that we were confronting here locally, which I'll speak to in more depth in a few minutes. So bottom line is we have to really think about this as a Venn diagram where we think about a patient's experience as kind of having a biological component, psychological, and social elements, and that these are all interrelated, that they're overlapping, and that it's really hard to tease them apart. And, you know, what we often say to our patients, particularly in our chronic pain treatment programs, is that once we get into the chronic phase of pain, we see psychosocial variables accounting for much more of the variance in patient presentation than does the biological element. In fact, oftentimes when our interdisciplinary team meets, you know, the reports from the physicians and biologically what's going on with the patient, it almost starts to sound in some ways like a broken record, that the elements are the same. We start to see the same presentations, the same imaging outcomes. But what we see are very different psychosocial profiles on which that pain is occurring. And it's those psychosocial variables that really account for much of the difference, and if left unaddressed, can really make the biological treatment of chronic pain quite challenging. So bottom line, we have to understand not just the pain and the etiology of the pain, but we have to really come to understand the person who's living with that pain. So this brings me to my second poll question, and I'm curious, at your facility, where do you encounter your biggest problems with the implementation of the step care model? Is it within step one at the primary care level? Is it at step two within specialty care? Is it in moving patients between those steps? Or is it in the coordination of care between the steps?
And we'll give everyone just a few more moments here before going through the results. Responses are coming in nicely. And give you all just a few more seconds here before I close it out. Okay. Close it out here. And the results that we're seeing are 13% saying step one in primary care, 18% saying step two, specialty care, 14% movement between steps, and 56% coordination of care between steps. Thank you, everyone, for participating.
Okay, thank you all for your responses. So this is quite telling, I think, in terms of looking at some of the challenges that we're all facing at our different facilities with implementation of both the step care model and what accompanies it, which is really taking a well-coordinated biopsychosocial approach to pain management. And so, again, the rest of my presentation is going to tell you kind of our story here at VA Connecticut about how we, much like you all, have encountered problems with movement of patients between steps, is, and more specifically with how do you coordinate the care that is being provided both between steps and within steps. So some of our local implementation problems, you know, first of all, starting with some national data, we know that chronic pain prevalence rates as high as 50% among the veterans we treat. And the chronic pain management presents numerous challenges both in the primary and the specialty care settings. And I list just a few of them here that that we discovered in our own efforts to treat chronic pain, and I'm sure a lot of these resonate with your own experience, and you probably all have other experiences that may not be listed here. But we look at everything from the time demands that patients with chronic pain often put on the healthcare system, the demands that are placed on the providers, the involvement of patient advocates through complaints about the care that's being provided, issues of diagnostic uncertainty, what to do next, what am I treating, difficulties engaging patients in empirically supported interventions. So we may understand the importance of a biopsychosocial approach, but it's sometimes difficult to get the patient to appreciate that and therefore to take the steps necessary to engage in multimodal care. Engaging supportive specialists can often be challenging for our primary care providers. Medication management, I think, should be near the top of the list, as this is usually what starts the concerns in the first place. You know, everything from initiating doses, escalating doses, concerns about aberrant use of medications. And then you get in to the next level of high-risk management. So a patient who may have a current or recent past issue with substance abuse, concerns about pseudo-addiction, psychiatric instability, all of which make the prescribing of opioids even more, that much more risky and challenging for our providers. And how does this problem manifest? Well, we started to recognize this problem and started to recognize particularly some of the frustrations being expressed both by patients at the level of patient advocate, but also by our providers, you know, listening to specialty providers saying, you know, we're not getting the right patients sent to us, or primary care providers saying, I can't get this patient off to any specialist who can help me with the complex management of this patient. So what happened here at our facility is really the consult process became center stage for this challenge. So we started looking at referrals that were made from our primary care providers to specialty care providers. And what we did is we wanted to kind of quantify, you know, we're hearing a lot of these rumblings about the challenges of getting patients to the right specialist, but what does this really look like quantitatively? So what we did is we examined pain-related consults from primary care off to 5 specific specialty pain clinics over a 1-year period. And the clinic referrals that we looked at included our pain medicine clinic, our neurology pain clinic, our physical therapy department, our bone and joint department, as well as our pain rehab school program. And what we found is over a 1-year period, approximately 4,400 consults were placed to these services. And of those 4,400 consults, 42% ended up canceled or discontinued. So if you do the math, 42% of 4,400 consults is quite a few consults. So patients for whom a service was intended that the patient never connected with that service. So we then went back and we started looking at these canceled and discontinued consults and wanted to understand why was this happening. So we came across a variety of reasons, and you can see them listed here. So consults that were deemed inappropriate by a specialist, you know, this isn't the right complaint for this department, were appropriate consults, but due to the high level of complexity, this patient was really best seen by an interdisciplinary team. So the specialist didn't feel that alone they could take on the patient that was being sent to them or the referral question that was being provided to them. Questions of premature consult. So, you know, this may be a good place for this patient, but not right now. They really should, you know, be trialed on more conservative measures or maybe sent to another service before turfing them up to us. Patients didn't follow through. So obviously there's a patient element here as well. So, you know, thinking about patient-centered care, you know, we're trying to get the patient off to the right specialist, but sometimes the patients are the ones who don't show or that ultimately opt to discontinue the consult. Patients are not interested. I'm not interested in seeing a physical therapist. I'm not interested in seeing somebody who can perhaps help me with an interventional procedure. Or what we find is consults that are discontinued because perhaps pain care had been assumed by another service. And one of the things that we've uncovered here is this what we tendency to what we call do shotgun consulting, where a patient may be consulted to four or five people simultaneously. One of those services may ultimately act on the consult, and then another service would say, well, it looks like, you know, neurology pain has already picked this up, we're going to discontinue, where ultimately that patient may have been best served in that other setting where the consult was discontinued. And so, again, this is where we start to get into this issue of discoordination of care at the level of step two in the model. So the bottom line is our high levels of discontinued and canceled consults are obviously a significant source of frustration for our referring providers, our primary care providers, who are struggling to manage high patient loads with lots of demands beyond chronic pain, and then having to manage pain on top of that with no sense of somebody that can help me do this. They reflect a lack of coordination of care. So again, how are our primary and our specialty providers working together? And we're starting to uncover the fact that there's really not a lot of coordination happening here. But we really felt locally that this should push us to think about the problem more broadly. You know, what are the systems issues that we're encountering here? What's happening at the level of the patient and system interface? You know, why are patients not making it from step one to step two? And how can we better organize our resources to improve this outcome? So interestingly, while we were taking a look at this, goes back to around 2012, we were looking at this problem clinically. We have a local project here that was funded through our Pain Research Center, which is our prime center, and this is a project that's called Project STEP, which is really looking at VA's implementation of the STEP care model. And as part of this larger project, there were a series of smaller projects that were ongoing, and one of those projects was really focused on the perceptions of primary care providers, and looking specifically at what challenges did primary care providers feel they were having with getting the best care for their patients with chronic pain. And so as part of this study, primary care providers were brought in, and they were asked the following questions. Describe some barriers that you feel limit your ability to manage chronic pain. And secondly, they were asked, you know, what are some of the negative aspects about caring for patients with chronic pain? And we thought that the findings from this study were quite interesting. So in breaking, this study broke the responses down into really three core domains. So at the systems domain, primary care providers really felt like they understood the importance and value of the biopsychosocial model, but given all the constraints that they were under, they really had difficulty exploring all the elements of it in a primary care visit. How can I do all of this and get patients connected to all of these different modalities and keep it coordinated while I'm trying to do five or six other things in a 20-minute visit? There was complaints about no forum to discuss challenging patients with specialists. You know, how can I communicate with the patient, with the specialist in a way other than through the electronic medical record? Difficulty coordinating treatment modalities. So again, while appreciating the value of multimodal care, the coordination simply was kept falling back to primary care, which again, with the large panels that they're dealing with, it can be very hard to coordinate some of that. Some of the personal and professional domain issues that were raised, these clinical quandaries, these diagnostic dilemmas that come up where the provider starts to scratch their head feeling like, you know, I feel like I've done everything I can to assist this patient. I'm not sure what to do next, and I'm not sure where to send the patient next. And also that fear of missing something. Am I doing everything that I can to help this patient and not being sure whether I am or not? And then in the interpersonal domain, providers were reporting feeling a lack of collaboration with specialists. In fact, some of them cited not even knowing who the specialists were in the facility. You know, I wouldn't know them if I tripped on them type of thing. So really a lack of interface between primary and specialty care providers. One of the issues, rejected consults, which we've just talked about, a sense of ownership. So primary care at times feeling, you know, when a patient is sent to a specialist, who owns this chronic pain treatment? Do we own it in primary care? Does the specialist own it? And when do the rules of ownership change? Was one of the challenges that they were finding. Difficult patient-provider interaction. So, you know, how to communicate with a patient about chronic pain, specifically around multimodal treatment and engaging in treatments that are more self-directed versus simply prescribing opioids. And finally, a patient's unwillingness to accept the referral. So again, advocating for a multimodal approach, advocating for biopsychosocial approach, but having patients who simply would be unwilling to go see a physical therapist again, or to engage in a treatment such as cognitive behavioral therapy for chronic pain, were all challenges that primary care providers were confronting. So taking this study that fortuitously for us was going on at the same time that we were looking at the issues of rejected consults, we thought, okay, there's something that we could learn here, at least from one side of the house. We understand now what the perspective of primary care providers is in terms of their efforts and their frustrations with trying to engage patients in the right care at the right time. And so really where this left us is we found a need. And that need was, how do we bridge step one in primary care and step two at specialty care in a way that serves the interest of both primary and specialty care providers? And so that became the mission for us over the next three and a half years that have transpired since we began this work. So what we did is we started a systems redesign process. And for many of us on the clinical side of the house, this was all a new way of talking for us. So this was really engaging our quality management department, and our quality management department, as yours, has specialists who are trained to do systems redesign. And what we engaged was a process called the Rapid Process Improvement Workshop, or an RPIW. And just to define this for you, an RPIW is an improvement process that brings together a team of staff from either various departments or a single department to examine a problem, eliminate waste, propose solutions, and implement changes. So for us, what this looked like was an opportunity to really bring together all of the key stakeholders in this game, working from primary care up through specialty care, including having representatives of the patient experience in the same room, trying to figure out how do we solve this problem. So we conducted a day-long rapid process improvement workshop. And that rapid process improvement workshop had the following goals. First of all, we wanted to improve the patient flow between primary and specialty care settings. Our second goal was to enhance the coordination of pain care that occurred between those settings. So it wasn't just about getting patients to the specialist, but how do we better coordinate the care that's being provided at both steps, as well as between specialists. And third is we wanted to increase the engagement of patients with chronic pain in multimodal therapy. So we wanted to develop a structure that would unburden primary care a bit from having to be the ones to pitch the biopsychosocial approach, to pitch the idea of a multimodal treatment plan. How can we develop a structure that can help make the case to the patient about the importance of this approach to chronic pain management? So the Rapid Process Improvement Workshop process, for those of you who have ever been through one, it's a bit of a whirlwind. So literally what we did is we took an entire group of specialists and primary care providers and patient representatives, and we put them in the room, and we spent the better part of the first half of the day going over the voice of the customer. So we wanted to understand from the perspective of the patient, from the perspective of the primary care provider, from the perspective of the specialty care provider, what was the issue. And then we went through a whole process using sticky notes to really lay out what did our current process look like, and then we ultimately developed a plan for what do we want our future state to look like. So we were lucky to have full administration support for conducting this RPIW. Our hospital administration really has been quite supportive of helping us find better ways to manage chronic pain. And so we were able to free up at least one representative from each of the departments listed here in our facility to engage in this one-day problem-solving workshop. So as you can see, again, everybody from primary through specialty care, as well as our quality management department, which is instrumental in helping us to run this meeting, as well as our research folks who had an interest in, you know, how are we, in fact, implementing this depth care model and how can we study that. So the first thing we looked at was our old model. And our old model was what we called the Comprehensive Pain Management Center. So to kind of walk you through from left to right, this all starts obviously down in step one in our primary care clinic. Our primary care provider then has a menu of options for where they might send a patient to get treatment for a pain condition or a chronic pain condition. And one of those options was our pain medicine clinic. Now, for folks who were referred to our pain medicine clinic, if they were deemed by the pain medicine staff to be highly complex for any number of reasons, that decision was made that that patient really needs to be evaluated by a multidisciplinary team. So what we had was our interdisciplinary level of care was our comprehensive pain management center. So in order for a patient to get to that clinic, they had to go from primary care, be fortunate enough to get the consult accepted at the level of the pain medicine clinic, at which point the decision was made, we really should have an interdisciplinary team look at this. And so our comprehensive pain management center was a team of specialists, including a health psychologist, a physical therapist, a neurologist, a pain anesthesiologist, who would collectively take a look at the patient and develop a care plan for them. Okay? However, in looking at this comprehensive pain management center model that we had, we realized, first off, that we were fortunate to have a team of specialists who could come together to do this. But what we realized is that the position of that clinic really was not well-timed. Specifically, that clinic was not addressing the gap between primary and specialty care. Just to go back to the model, in order to even get to that clinic, the patient already had to clear that hurdle between step one and two and then be fortunate enough to get selected out of the pain medicine group and sent into the interdisciplinary team. So what ended up happening is the clinic became reserved really for a select few patients who happened to make it through that specialty process. And then what we were finding is that in a lot of cases, the patients that were being cherry-picked out of the pain medicine service to be treated or seen or evaluated by the interdisciplinary team were folks for whom the interdisciplinary assessment process almost seemed so poorly timed that the patient did not really receive well the plan that that team would put together for them. So here you'd have this whole team of specialists investing a lot of time and come up with a plan that might include a combination of, you know, reengaging in physical therapy or occupational therapy or seeing the chiropractor or engaging in acupuncture or receiving cognitive behavioral therapy for chronic pain, when really what these patients were here seeking was opioids. And so because of the placement of this clinic in terms of the structure, it was not uncommon that the efforts would go wasted in the respect that patient care typically would not change as a result of all of these efforts being directed towards them. So again, looking at that placement of the Comprehensive Pain Management Center, we realized quickly that this was not, it was the right model, but not at the right time in terms of the overall structure. So what we decided to do as a process of this RPIW is to test a new model. And as you can see in our model here, we've now moved our interdisciplinary assessment clinic from beyond step two, and we've put it right in between step one and step two. And so now we've changed the name from our Comprehensive Pain Management Center to our Integrated Pain Clinic. And we call it integrated because we are, in essence, embedding in primary care one half day a week a team of specialists who evaluate patients who come to them directly from primary care, and they engage in a triage process where they evaluate the patient, help to develop a care plan, and then ultimately get the patient off to the right specialist or specialists at step two. So our integrated pain clinic really, first and foremost, was to help for primary care simplify the pain referral process. So often, if a patient's care needs at step two were not exactly clear, primary care providers found themselves in that conundrum that we saw a few slides earlier, where they didn't know where to send the patient next. So either they would not send a patient anywhere and say, I'll continue to try and figure this out, or they would try that shotgun approach where they might send a referral to three or four different specialists at one time, which then ultimately led to a lot of discontinued consults and really a lack of coordination of care. We also wanted to, through this clinic, increase early access to interdisciplinary consultation. So unlike our old comprehensive pain management center, where we were finding that our interdisciplinary efforts were really falling flat in a lot of cases because the patients were, you know, simply, you know, at this point in their care, just simply looking for the opioids. They didn't want to engage any other model. We're trying to move this, this innovative clinic earlier in the process so that we can help avoid patients getting to that point where we start early. We start at the primary care level of, you know, bolstering the message that our primary care providers are delivering, which is that we need to be getting you engaged in multimodal care, really emphasizing the biopsychosocial approach. So we wanted to promote early access to rehabilitative and self-management treatments. We also wanted to facilitate multimodal treatment approaches, so not just development of multimodal care plans, but we want to really make sure that after a patient is referred to this clinic, that the means are in place for them to actually engage these multimodal therapies at step two. And finally, we wanted to enhance access to our specialists, including mental health and substance abuse, so that we can make sure that what we are doing is safe and in the best interest of our patients who are utilizing opioids. So our integrated pain clinic provides, one day a week, an interdisciplinary assessment clinic that's embedded within our primary care setting. And this clinic is largely centered around the biopsychosocial approach. So we're interested in assessing not just physically what is going on with a patient who is referred to us, but we also want to understand who that person is. So it's understanding not just the pain, but the person who has the pain, and understanding the context in which that pain is occurring so that we can do a better job of developing multimodal care plans. So our typical referral questions once we launched our integrated pain clinic included everything from, you know, concerns about escalating opioids and using opioids as a monotherapy for chronic pain, seeking validation. A primary care provider would send a patient to us saying, you know, can you please tell me that, you know, my efforts to reduce opioids are the right thing to do here? Diagnostic clarification, trying to get a sense of, am I treating the right thing or what is it that we're treating here? Assistance in identifying additional treatment options. Can you tell me where I can get this patient seen, or what else can I bring on board to help this patient? And also, as I had said earlier, trying to enlist the veteran in a multidisciplinary or multimodal approach to chronic pain management, which, as I cited earlier, is something that primary care providers here understood, but really felt a heavy burden in terms of trying to be the only one to try and get this message across to patients. So our integrated pain clinic involves the following specialists. So our actual assessment team includes clinical health psychology, our physiatry department, our physical therapy department, as well as a pain anesthesiologist. And we evaluate, this team actually performs the evaluations when the patients come into clinic. And then when we do our team meetings to discuss care planning, we have additional consultants in both pharmacy and addiction psychiatry, and we also have a primary care pain specialist who sits in to help us in formulating treatment options and recommendations for the patients. So the way our clinic flowed was patients would be told that they were going to come into the clinic and that they would be here for, you know, the better part of a morning. And what they would do is, over the course of 2 hours from 9 to 11, they would spend a half an hour with each of our specialists. We would have four patients come in, and the patients would rotate in a half-hour round-robin format. So at the end of the 2 hours, each patient would have seen all four of the specialists. And then from 11 to 12, the team would convene with our additional consultants to put our heads together to figure out what are the best recommendations for this patient, what are the best specialists at step two for this patient to get tied into. And then after the team meeting, we would bring the patient back in and we would sit down and do a feedback session with them. And really what we found in our experience is that the feedback session is really the active ingredient of our clinic, in the respect that oftentimes we're promoting a multimodal approach to chronic pain management moving forward, And this often is met with a lot of questions, concerns, frustrations from the patient. And it's through that process of feedback that we're really able to spend some time not just giving recommendations, but also delivering education to the patient about the biopsychosocial approach, helping them to understand multimodal care and how it all works together. And really what we think is what helps to motivate a patient to perhaps engage in a treatment that they otherwise might have been quick to reject. So during the team meeting, each of the providers comes into the room and really summarizes their findings. And what our focus is on is developing an assessment plan and a set of treatment recommendations. We get the input from our consultants. And what we do is when we can access them and when they're free, pull in our PAC team members. So if there is a nurse or a primary care provider from that patient's team available, because we are based in primary care, they in some cases will stop in and also provide us additional input or listen to what the team has to say in terms of recommendations moving forward. Our providers oftentimes curbside consult us while we're down there, so they see this team of specialists floating around in the clinic, and they're often quick to grab us and ask a question maybe about a patient who we evaluated for them at a previous date or at an upcoming date. So again, it's a nice way to start to break down some of those barriers that were cited by our primary care providers of not having access to the specialist. And then ultimately what our team does is it develops, as I've said, a plan for downstream referrals. So how do we then get the patients engaged in these with the right specialists at the right time? So really the way we envisioned our integrated pain clinic was as step 1.5. So if you think about the step care model, this is step 1.5 to help patients get from primary care, step 1, to the right specialist at step 2. It's been very successful with enhancing primary care provider access and communication with our specialists. It's been very helpful for triaging patients to the right specialists, and it's provided a nice pathway to our opioid monitoring clinic for our veterans who are prescribed opioids who are at high risk for adverse outcomes with those opioids. So what I want to do now is just to deviate for a minute and tell you a little bit about our high-risk opioid monitoring clinic, because it is intimately tied into our integrated pain clinic. So as I had said earlier, when primary care providers place consults to our integrated pain clinic, oftentimes there is an embedded question about opioids and concern about opioids, aberrant use of opioids, increasing doses of opioids, or a patient who was just landed in a provider's panel, either from an outside provider or from a provider within the facility, and the opioid dose is extremely high, and due to medical comorbidities, the provider has concern about it and really wants some assistance with managing the safety of that opioid script moving forward. So one of the offshoots that we've added to our integrated pain clinic is what we call our opioid reassessment clinic, which is highlighted here as in yellow as our ORC, our opioid reassessment clinic. And what our opioid reassessment clinic does is, again, it's another clinic, it's embedded within primary care, and it's designed to assess or to provide further addiction-related assessment. So if there's concern about addiction to opioid medication, further assessment can be delivered within this clinic. This clinic also is designed to provide structured and monitored opioid prescribing, which can last anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And what this monitoring is designed to do is to figure out, can we get the patient on a safe dose of opioid that they can manage safely moving forward? And if they can't, then the team works to then take the patient off of the opioid while, again, closely monitoring them and perhaps connecting them to other resources such as our substance abuse clinic if needed. Within the opioid reassessment clinic, much of the focus is on motivational enhancement and helping patients to understand kind of what the contingencies around opioid management really are. So within our ORC, so our primary care pain specialist, who's one of the consultants to our integrated pain clinic, he sits in on all of our IPC team meetings. And as we discuss patients within the integrated pain clinic, if there really seems to be an issue around opioid safety, we then consult with our primary care pain specialist to say, is this a good patient who might benefit from follow-up in our opioid reassessment clinic? When patients enter into that clinic, they're followed by a number of providers, including a team discussion that's led by our APRN, who does a thorough chart review for all patients referred to the opioid reassessment clinic. We have an addiction psychiatrist who provides assessment and follow-up for patients. Our primary care pain specialist also provides follow-up assessment and care for the patient. They, much like the integrated pain clinic, engage in interdisciplinary planning, team discussion, and really they work to put together a plan for what are the next steps going to be for this patient. And then on follow-up, we have the APRN and the MD who follow up with the patient for the opioid prescribing. We also have our addiction psychiatrist, as needed, will follow up with patients as they come back to clinic, and our health psychologist is embedded in there as well. So just to put this all together, again, targeting what one of our concerns was, which is that primary care providers really struggle with getting patients connected to services, the flow really is that an IPC consult comes directly from primary care. That consult is then triaged, and our primary care pain specialist is who's an MD, is the one who triages all of the consults for us and makes a determination. And the determination either is that this question, the referral question, is really about opioid safety, in which case the patient may be sent directly into the opioid reassessment clinic. If there are concerns about opioids, but there's also a lack of multimodal care planning going on for this patient, the consult may be triaged into the integrated pain clinic, where then the patient could be engaged in multimodal treatment, as well as follow-up in our opioid reassessment clinic. So just to show you what some of our outcomes have looked like, our early outcomes with our integrated pain clinic, looking first at the chart at the top, this reflects on a month-by-month basis the number of referrals that are made from primary care to our clinic. Now, again, these are not necessarily referrals of patients who are ultimately seen in our clinic. Sometimes during that triage process, when a consult comes in, our primary care pain specialist is able to, through chart review, realize that there's something else that may, perhaps a more mainstream approach that can be taken with this patient, doesn't warrant an interdisciplinary evaluation at that point. So he can then work directly with the referring provider to connect the patient to that specific specialty service. But nonetheless, what this chart reflects is really we've seen quite a jump in terms of the number of referrals once we launched in September of 2012, and we've really maintained a fairly steady flow over the subsequent months in terms of this clinic. In the table at the bottom, what we did with our first round of patients that came into the clinic is we wanted to see, were we hitting our target, which was for every patient who came through the integrated pain clinic, are we doing what we hope to be doing, which is to connect these patients with a multimodal care plan? So what we did is we took each of the patients and we looked at what happened in the 6 months prior to them coming to our clinic, and then we subsequently followed them for 6 months after they left our clinic. And what this table shows is, on the first line, the number of distinct specialists seen by the sample. So this is a sample of 34 patients. So that sample had seen 71 specialists before coming to our integrated pain clinic. After our integrated pain clinic, that number jumped to 117. The number of collective visits that they made to those specialists was 174 before the integrated pain clinic. That number jumped to 333 after the integrated pain clinic. The average number of specialists that each patient saw was 2 in the 6 months prior to coming to our clinic. It was almost 3.5 in the 6 months after they came to our clinic. And then looking at the average number of specialty care visits per patient, meaning the number of visits that they made to those specialists, was just about 5 before coming to clinic, jumped to almost 10 post-clinic. So this review of these data really suggested to us that we are, in fact, doing what we had proposed to do with this clinic, which was to engage patients in multimodal care, to increase their rates of engagement through both the acceptance of consults at the secondary care level, but also, as I mentioned earlier, through the process of patient education, helping the patients to understand the importance of multimodal care so that they themselves can be the change agent in terms of getting themselves engaged. So despite all of the successes, we did still realize that after our first round or our first trial of our integrated pain clinic, there were still some issues that needed to be addressed. And among those, we saw very low utilization of our clinic by our community-based outpatient providers. So our community-based outpatient clinics were simply not referring many patients to us. We also saw that there was a lack of support for overseeing the implementation of our integrated pain clinic treatment plans. So our team was spending a lot of time in putting these plans together, but ultimately the coordination of it was still falling back on primary care, which we know from our earlier study that we cited was one of their points of frustration. And obviously missed opportunities. So, for example, our patient no-shows. So when a patient no-shows to a clinic where we have four specialists waiting to see them, it really results in a tremendous waste of resources. So we decided to undergo some more systems redesign, this time with the assistance from a grant that we applied for through the VA Office of Specialty Care Transformation, where they were really focused on these three key topics: multidisciplinary teams, care coordination, and primary and specialty care integration. They were really focused on this idea of developing a specialty care neighborhood. And so in applying for this grant, our primary goals were to both increase our CBOC provider use of the integrated pain clinic, as well as to add nurse case management services, so that after a patient came through our clinic, there was one point person who could help the patient, the primary care provider, and the specialty care providers with implementing the care plans that we put together. So these care plans are purposely designed to be integrated and multi-step, and this nurse now would become the glue to kind of help hold the plan together. So we underwent two more rapid process improvement workshops, one in February and one in June of last year. And what this process really helped us to do is to identify some of the inefficiencies in our process or our missed opportunities. So, you know, why were patients sometimes not showing and what could we do to prevent that in the future? And then through these two RPIWs, we developed strategies to move us closer towards those goals that I just cited. So the updates to our IPC, as of January, I'm happy to report that we have now added a nurse case manager as a new addition to our clinic. And as I said, this nurse case manager serves in a variety of roles, including pre-clinic connection with the patients, doing a pre-clinic visit telephone screening, assessing patient interest and motivation, again, to make sure that when we put a patient in an appointment slot, that slot is maintained, and that if the patient opts not to, we can get a new patient into that slot. But I think more importantly, the nurse case manager is there to, again, provide assistance to our primary care providers in implementing what are oftentimes very complex multi-step care plans that the IPC team puts together. Our second point is we've now installed video conferencing equipment in our IPC clinic room, where when we're sitting to meet as a team to discuss a patient who's been referred to us, we can connect by video to the primary care provider or nurse or, you know, some other member of the care team out at the CBOC, so that we can get their input, recognizing that oftentimes providing care in a more rural setting can look very different than providing care in and around our main facility. So now we have that opportunity to connect with those providers and understand what are the barriers they're confronting, as that may ultimately shift the plan that we put together, but also involving our nurse case manager to help understand what non-VA care might be available and how do we engage that patient in non-VA care because they're simply not close enough to a VA medical facility, but also make sure we're getting feedback from that non-VA care provider so that we can keep the loop closed. And finally, the IPC update, we've redesigned our clinic flow now to promote efficiency. So what we're doing now is rather than having each of the disciplines meet with the patient separately, we're doing our visits in dyads. So in a full hour now, a patient will meet with an anesthesiologist and the health psychologist together. So they're co-assessing the patient, which increases efficiency. We were finding that a lot of our providers were asking the same questions of the patient, and so to reduce that redundancy, we've now put our providers together so that they can do a joint assessment, and they can benefit from each other's assessment. And then the other dyad is our physiatrist and our physical therapist also now evaluate the patient together. And one of the big efficiencies that this helped to address is, you know, rather than having the pain anesthesiologist undress the patient, have the patient get redressed and then go to the physiatrist and get undressed and redressed, what we do now is we keep the patient in the room and our team rotates. So now when a patient checks into the clinic, the team is the one that's moving to see each of the patients, so that if a patient has to be undressed for a physical exam, they can stay in the room in a Johnny coat and the team will be the one to move around. We were not doing it that way prior. And then our patients will now have an opportunity to meet specifically with their nurse case manager, recognizing that after they leave our clinic, most of their contact with that nurse case manager will be by phone. This is a nice opportunity for them to connect with her while they're here in clinic, make a face-to-face connection, and then, you know who they're following up with as the treatment plan is put into motion. So our successes to date, aside from the ones that I've showed in terms of our IPC outcome data, we've really seen a marked reduction in canceled consults to our specialty clinics. And this is due in large part to the fact that our specialists, because they were part of our initial RPIW, they understand what the integrated pain clinic does. They recognize that if a consult is coming for a patient who's been through the IPC, that the patient, in essence, has already been vetted. They've already been put through an initial evaluation to know that this is the right place for them to be coming. We've also seen improved communication between our PAC teams and our specialists, and really that's facilitated because they're now in shared space. We're bringing our specialists down into our primary care clinic to do work, to do their work there. We've also seen an increased utilization of our wide array of multimodal pain treatment options, which is obviously very good in this age of trying to downplay the role of opioids and minimize the role of opioids. We want to engage patients in other multimodal care. Timely addiction treatment and referrals through both uncovering such issues in our integrated pain clinic and/or through our opioid reassessment follow-up clinic. And our PAC providers are now perceiving improved support and satisfaction with the process that we've put in place. Because in essence, we're tackling many of the barriers that they've shared with us. So in terms of closing out, our lessons learned. Obviously, implementation of the step care model and the application of the biopsychosocial approach can be very challenging. And it's one thing to say that your facility has a lot of resources, but that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. It's really how do we coordinate those resources that's important. And one thing we've learned is that if you perceive there to be a flaw in your system, it's very likely that others see it the same way. And our RPIWs really uncovered that as we kind of put all these folks into a room, all of whom have had the same grumblings, the same gripes with the process, but nobody's really spoke up to say anything about it. But then as soon as you gave them a forum, the issues were put out, and then everybody was focused on how do we solve this. And obviously, interdisciplinary care is essential for tackling the complexities of chronic pain. Not as much of a lesson learned as something we already knew heading in, but realized that we're being reminded of this now that we've improved our process and we're actually seeing it happen. Other lessons learned, get to know your quality management team. So I think part of us telling our story here is to connect with you guys in the respect that we were struggling with a lot of the same issues you probably are, and this was a gold mine of a resource that we did not know that we had. And by simply reaching out to them and engaging our systems redesign specialists, it really helped us to move ourselves beyond the clinical problems we were having and helped us to really think systematically about how to fix them. And through the process of all these RPIWs and the sticky notes and the sitting in a room and all of that, we found that really investing time up front can really pay dividends over time. And finally, that systems redesign is never done. I think we've all walked out of our series of three RPIWs now with a greater eye towards how can we continue to improve the system, where are inefficiencies, and what can we do to address them. And so just to acknowledge our staff, including our leadership, as well as our clinical staff involved directly in our clinic, this is our team standing in front of a whole board of sticky notes from one of our RPIWs, as well as our quality management staff who were really instrumental in helping us bring about a change. Some references attached to this presentation, if you are interested, things that I've cited throughout the presentation, and I think I'll open it now for questions and comments.
Thank you, Dr. Sellinger. That was a great presentation. I have some questions coming through. One question is, have you considered the integration of occupational therapy into the team?
We have not, actually. I know that our occupational therapists were a part of our initial RPIW process. One of the things that we do have on our team is we have a physical therapist who is very in tune with the benefit of occupational therapy for patients. And so we do make referrals for occupational therapy out of our integrated pain clinic. So it's not that we're you know, not attending to those issues as much as we are simply trying to work with the staffing resources that we do have. And I think we, you know, our physical therapists might argue that we have, you know, at least some eyes on that, as well as our physiatrist in terms of understanding what the role of an occupational therapist might be. But in terms of adding another team member, we have not thought about that explicitly.
In addition to some of the outcomes that you described, do you have any outcomes for patient satisfaction or provider satisfaction with the process?
Yes, yeah, so we do have provider satisfaction, and I think I had referenced that in the presentation, that our providers really are quite satisfied with the integrated pain clinic for many of the reasons that they cited as problematic before we had an integrated pain clinic. They really feel that the having access to specialists has greatly improved by simply having, you know, these specialists embedded in primary care. Also with one of the main struggles that was that persisted even despite our IPC was this idea that, yes, the team would put together a great coordinated plan, but then it was falling back on primary care. That remained a bit of a frustration, but now that we've implemented our nurse case manager, they feel supported in having somebody who's going to help make sure that all pieces of the plan are kind of put into place and that they're only going to be kind of brought in if there's a real issue for them to have to address specifically. So there's been quite a bit of satisfaction with that. In terms of measuring patient satisfaction, we have not done so beyond kind of keeping a log of anecdotal feedback we get from our patients. And it's really not uncommon, at least once per clinic, for a patient to walk out really expressing satisfaction with a variety of things. But the thing we hear the most frequently is the idea that nobody has ever spent this much time talking to me about my pain. And so really having a team of really a multidisciplinary team look at pain from multiple perspectives, spend time, put their heads together to develop a plan, and then come back in and talk with the patient in real time about what that plan is and to help them help address in real time what their questions and concerns are. We often anecdotally hear comments along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But we really should develop a mechanism.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, are you also collecting objective measures of the pain outcomes, and are you objectively looking at how many consults are made now and what percentage are followed up?
We are not at the current time, but we do have a plan. So we're working on our next phase of, you know, I said our systems redesign is never done. So our Plan, Do, Study, Act, what we're doing now is we're preparing to start studying what we're doing. And so we're involving our informatics folks to help start to pull some of that patient-level data, looking at a variety of outcomes, including reports of pain intensity, but more importantly, looking at consult follow-up, looking at opioid utilization, et cetera. So we do have plans to start looking at that.
Did the primary care providers share the same biopsychosocial model of care that the integrated pain clinic followed? And maybe can you talk about if there were any obstacles with adoption of this model?
I think, largely speaking, that there's a great deal of variability among providers as to how much they adopt or attempt to implement the different elements of the biopsychosocial model. I think what we find more often than not is when a patient becomes, we'll use the word problematic in the respect that we don't, you know, the provider doesn't know where to send the patient next, or, you know, the provider perceives that the patient is exceeding their level of expertise. We oftentimes hear this idea of, you know, this patient has, you know, these psychosocial issues and it's preventing me from treating their pain, et cetera. But sometimes we don't see that necessarily in a proactive way, where we try to push a biopsychosocial approach from the beginning. But I would say that we've been doing quite a bit of work here at our facility for a number of years on this idea of a biopsychosocial approach to chronic pain. And so I'd say for the most part, there really is an adoption of the biopsychosocial model. Where we see more of the variability, though, is in how is it implemented.
Right. I just wanted to ask Heidi, we still have a lot of questions that are here and are coming in. Is it okay if we can continue?
I do believe we have a little extra time. We can run over a little bit if we need to, yeah.
Okay, great. Dr. Sandra, can you flesh out the role of the health psychologist?
Sure.
Behavioral health coordinator?
Absolutely. So our our health psychologist is, so it's myself in our integrated pain clinic, but we do have, we train pre-doctoral interns in clinical health psychology, and so we have really a team of three of us. This year we were fortunate to have four, and that we had a postdoctoral resident as well. And what the role of the psychologist is really to help kind of tease apart for the patient, you know, what have been some of the obstacles to really function, you know, limited functional status beyond just, you know, it hurts. So we're assessing things like mood. We're assessing things like, you know, goals. What is the patient's goal? And it's, I'd say probably one of the biggest things we do within the integrated pain clinic is really get to the bottom of, you know, what is it that drives this patient every day? Because so much of their focus typically is on pain and how much it hurts and what's my next treatment going to look like. And they really haven't thought beyond that in terms of, you know, functional status and quality of life. So we assess a lot of the variables that speak to those two issues. We also assess, you know, as any psychologist would, we assess issues of, you know, mood, risk issues, recognizing the high prevalence of depression and suicidality and chronic pain. So we make sure that when a patient comes through our clinic that we are assessing those variables and making sure that we are putting into the care plan, you know, treatment options that are going to address those factors as much as some of the more physically based modalities. And then ultimately, we have quite a vast health psychology service here. Our health psychologist is always looking to identify patients whom they can schedule follow-up with. So as we start to uncover issues around, you know, motivation or goal setting or, you know, a patient who is, you know, living a lifestyle that is in a lot of ways contributing to deconditioning and perhaps worsening of chronic pain, engaging them in our health psychology service for work specifically focused in the area of pain management, whether it's cognitive behavioral therapy for chronic pain or behavioral treatment for other conditions that we might uncover, such as, you know, patients typically present with problems with sleep, or they're also, you know, overweight and they're having a hard time losing weight or increasing physical activity. So we can engage them in any number of health psychology focused services that will help to complement their overall chronic pain treatment plan.
Here's some nuts and bolts questions. How many patients do you see each week in the integrative evaluation clinic, and what kinds of measures, questionnaires do you give out?
Okay. So we see, each morning we see three patients, and when the patients come in, they are, they're provided with three questionnaire packets. One is, the pain outcomes questionnaire, which is based out of, our Tampa VA. We also provide them with a pain catastrophizing scale to kind of understand, patients', thinking about their chronic pain, as oftentimes, catastrophic thinking styles are often one of the biggest barriers to change, so we want to make sure we're getting an understanding of that. And we also provide patients with a health behavior checklist in which we ask them to check off for us whatever problems they perceive that they're having because of their chronic pain. So are they having problems sleeping? Are they having problems, you know, is pain impacting their mood? Is pain impacting their ability to work? So we want to quickly get a sense of, you know, what is the impact that pain is having so that when we bring them back into the clinic to do our assessment, we have some key areas where we can target in on our assessment.
So there's also a question about whether you plan to do something at the national level with this work.
Not at this point. I guess this is it. to kind of spread the word, but no, there's we don't amongst ourselves have any national plans.
Could you speak a little bit more about the what you do in terms of addiction, the addiction component?
Mm-hmm. So with the issue around addiction is usually kind of spelled out for us in a consult that a provider would send. So the provider suspects that there may be an addiction issue, either opioid or otherwise, and that's impacting on their decision making in terms of how to manage this patient's chronic pain moving forward. Or, you know, we might simply uncover it ourselves in our assessment where, you know, the patient walks in and it's very clear that, you know, from the moment they walk in the door, that all they want to talk about is medication. We see increasing frustration with discussion of other modalities that might be helpful, in which case we, you know, if as a team our providers feel that an opioid, you know, or a medication treatment for chronic pain might be appropriate, yet potentially problematic, we would then say, okay, part of our recommended care plan is that this patient be referred to our opioid reassessment clinic, where they would get a further addictions workup, and then other treatment modalities could be considered. If not opioids, it could be, you know, starting a patient on methadone or getting the patient connected to our substance abuse treatment programs, or putting the patient on BUP, something like that. And then within that clinic, they would, you know, if a decision was made that an opioid is appropriate, that adjustments to the opioids might be made, but then the patient is monitored quite regularly for a period of time. And usually it starts off with weekly meetings, and then as the patient demonstrates safety and efficacy with the medication, they may extend those meetings to twice a week or monthly until ultimately the patient is you know, deemed to be on a safe dose, and at which time the care plan is passed back to primary care. However, what we usually do before sending a patient to that clinic is we want to be clear with the referring provider that if it's determined that there is perhaps a role of for opioids in this care plan, are you willing to take this back? And if the provider says no, then there's really no sense in sending the patient to our opioid reassessment clinic, because, you know, ultimately the care plan there might result in a dose of opioids being passed back to the primary care provider. So we get all that input up front, which our primary care pain specialist does. He consults with the referring provider to make sure that if this could be done safely and effectively, that this is something the primary care provider would be willing to continue. And if the answer is yes, then we engage the ORC process.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've made a lot of progress going from step one to step two. Have you seen improvement from kind of step two to step three, going to advanced treatments like spinal cord stimulation, surgery?
Yeah, well, I mean, in essence, that would be a step two intervention. I mean, that would be getting a patient connected to, you know, our neurosurgery department, or, you know, to our pain medicine specialists who can do pump implants. And so, yes, I mean, that's really a step one to step two question. I think the biggest thing we find is that so when the patient comes into the IPC, kind of all options are on the table, and then the purpose of IPC is to make a determination as to whether those are appropriate for this patient, and then to engage the patient on the feedback as to, you know, if a stimulator were an option, you know, is the patient interested? And the feedback session becomes an educational session about what a stimulator is and what the potential benefits might be. And then if the patient says, you know, oh, yes, I'm interested in hearing more about this, then the patient is referred on to the appropriate specialist for that care. And the nice part is again, once the person who might do the stimulator implant sees that the consult is coming from a patient that's already been screened through the integrated pain clinic, it's more of a seamless process, knowing that we've kind of vetted out what some of the contraindications might be.
So I'm just going to ask one last question, Dr. Salinger. Apologies for not getting to, or just a few questions I'm not going to get to, but I really want to encourage folks to contact Dr. Salinger directly if I wasn't able to get to your question. But this final question is kind of, how do patients get discharged from the IPC, or kind of what happens in the longer term? How long are they followed for?
It's a good question. So the Integrated Pain Clinic itself is a one-time consult clinic. So what we're really designed to do is kind of step one and a half in our model is to help primary care providers, you know, by taking a quick screening look at this patient, make a determination as to what elements of a care plan make sense. We help to order those elements and then get the patients connected out to the specialists. The long-term element of the integrated pain clinic is really the role of the nurse case manager, where we want to make sure that everything we've recommended has actually been implemented. So what has happened prior to us having a nurse case manager is all of that would fall back to the primary care provider, and then the integrated pain clinic was done. Now, having the nurse case manager is kind of the extra arm of the IPC. That nurse case manager's role is to stay connected with that patient until all elements of the plan have been implemented, And then once that's the case, then the nurse case manager is no longer follows that patient.
Great. Thank you so much for preparing and presenting, Dr. Selinger. We really appreciate it. The audience has some great questions. We've had about 100 attendees who have continued with the cyber seminar way after 12 o'clock. So I think that that shows how much interest there was in this topic and how much people appreciated your talk. Our next cyber seminar will be on Tuesday, May 5th by Dr. Travis Lovejoy. We will be sending registration information out to everyone around the 15th of the month. I want to thank you for joining us at this HSR&D cyber seminar, and we hope to see you at a future session.
Thank you.